Animal Central on cliffcentral.com.
Good morning, animal lovers. Wednesday's rolled around again. I'm your host for the next hour. My name is Sharon Dale, and we once again talking about all things animal. I really, really always enjoy all the fantastic guests we have in studio. And today we're going to talk about a really hot topic. We're going to talk about something that Carte Blanche exposed over the last weekend about the keeping of exotic animals as pets. And to discuss that, we got Smaragda Lowe from Ban Animal Trading in studio. And then we've also got, at the same time, we've got Corinne Spottiswood. And now Corinne is a very well-known field guide and naturist. And she's going to talk to us about, you know, the little animals, from the little ones all the way to the big ones that we find in the wild, and how people can enjoy them. And I think this is a conversation that both ladies can get involved in, because there are ways that we can enjoy our animals without going to circuses, without, you know, the animals suffering for our entertainment. But before we get started on that, I actually found some wonderful little facts about gorillas this week. Gorillas are very, very dear to my heart. And they also under tremendous threat. There are only about 700 mountain gorillas that live high up in the mountain, in the mountains in two protected parks in Africa. These are lowland gorillas, and you may have seen baby gorillas being carried on the backs of their mummies, but for the first few months after birth, the mother holds the little baby gorilla to her chest. So when these poachers go in and kill these gorillas for bushmeat, to make ornaments, can you believe it, to make ornaments out of their, I don't know if you call a gorilla's a hand, it's not a paw, it's a hand. Now, an adult male gorilla is called a silverback because of the distinctive silvery fur he's got growing on his back and hips. Each gorilla family has a silverback as a leader, whose job is to scare away any other animals by standing on his back legs and beating his chest. And I'm sure most of you have seen this awesome, awesome sight. Now, gorillas are herbivores, so they spend most of their day foraging for food and eating bamboo, leafy plants, and they sometimes even eat small insects. Can you believe that these adult gorillas eat up to 30 kilograms of food every day? And they're about a meter tall to their shoulders when walking on all fours using their arms and their legs. A gorilla should be able to live 40 to 50 years. That is, if there weren't poachers out there and people taking away their land. They're considered to be very intellectual animals and are known for the use of tools and communication as well. Now, there have been some gorillas that have been used, that have been put in zoos in captivity, that have been taught to use sign language. And I actually saw a program on that, which was actually very sad to me, because this one gorilla was taught sign language, but then was put into a zoo where it actually sat there and it signed, "It is sad," which just completely broke my heart. So please remember, these are endangered habitats. Gorillas are endangered animals, and their habitat is being destroyed when people use the land for farming and they cut down trees. They're killed by poachers and they get caught in poachers' snares. So if you want to help out, you can visit www.saveagorilla.org or the International Gorilla Conservation Program, which is on www.igcp.org. So let's spare a thought for our big brothers. I mean, we're supposed to have descended from the apes, so there we go. Now, another bit of good news that I got in was that New Zealand has unveiled plans to create a South Pacific marine sanctuary that is the size of France. Now, this is going to protect one of the world's most pristine ocean environments. I want to get somebody on the line to talk to us about that, but this is absolutely fantastic, because overfishing is a growing problem that could mean no more fish for us. Now, would closing the ocean for a few years stop this trend? Who knows? But the Prime Minister of New Zealand said on Monday that the Kermadec Ocean Sanctuary would cover an area of 62,000 square kilometres, and it's about 1,000 kilometres off New Zealand's northeast coast. So that is some great news. At least, you know, people are doing something out there. And then lastly, a bit of news. I don't know, most of you, or people who certainly own horses, will have picked up a copy of HQ magazine. Now, part of their 100th edition celebration, they're hosting a golf day, and the proceeds are in aid of the National Horse Trust. This is happening on Wednesday, the 21st of October, at the Kyalami Country Club. So All you golfers out there, yes, something to do, something for a good cause and to help our horses. It starts at 11:30 and there's a four ball, a combo or a whole sponsorship available. So to confirm your bookings, you need to contact Chanel at panorama.co.za or you can contact Claudia Sharon. She is on Claudia at panorama, panorama.co.za. Donations are also welcome. At this fundraising event, the National Horse Trust was established in 1989, not that long ago, to take care of abused and neglected horses. It assists in the funding of various horse care units all over the country, and it also assists in the prevention of abuse of horses and donkeys. So this is really, really a great, great cause. Okay, so let's move on to my two wonderful guests. Smaragda, welcome. Corinne, thank you again for joining us. We had you in a couple of weeks ago, and we had so many great comments, so we thought we'd bring you back in again. But Smaragda, let's start with you. The Carte Blanche episode on Sunday. Now, I missed it. I wasn't in. I'm waiting for the repeat. But just for our listeners in, for those people who didn't watch the Carte Blanche episode on exotic pets, tell us about this.
The program was basically about cats being kept in backyards as pets. You know, so in other words, tigers, mostly tigers that are kept as babies. Because as you know, lions are indigenous animals, so we don't really get a permit or something like that. I mean, you could get a permit. It's not really that difficult.
Right.
But you need a permit to keep a lion. But an equally dangerous animal like a tiger, you don't need a permit for him or her. Mm. So all you need is a transport permit, which nobody checks anyway. So why bother? And so basically you can have a tiger cub in your backyard, you know, amongst the washing lines. It's actually atrocious. And these animals are equally dangerous. It really makes no sense whatsoever. And the fact is that people who keep these cats are not doing anything illegal.
No. No, that is the most surprising part here. Is that as you say, you can't keep a lion, but you could probably keep a tiger, you could keep any kind of animal, a kangaroo, you could keep koala bears, as long as it's exotic.
Absolutely.
Which makes no sense.
It makes no sense. And you know what you just said about New Zealand was so interesting for me to listen to, because that is the way to go. That is what conservation means. It means doing something that benefits the wild populations.
Yes.
Everything in the wild. We often hear from, they call themselves the hobbyists when they are into exotic breeding and so on. They'll say, no, but you know what humans are doing? They are going into the areas where these animals are. They're encroaching. So it means these animals are going to become extinct. And so we take them out of the wild, we breed them, and then we have the species captive. That's not conservation. That's doing it for pleasure and profit. Mm-hmm. And that's why with anything that comes into exotic animals when they're not rescue, we cannot think otherwise that it's only about people, my pleasure,
profit.
My profit, what I want. So it's all about how we dominate the animal kingdom. And that is just really revolting.
And there's a lot of ego involved too. Oh. I saw a report about some chap who had two tiger cubs in his back garden.
Yes.
And people were reporting this, but of course there's nothing anyone can do about it because it isn't illegal.
Exactly.
And this guy was obviously very proud and good ego boost. Mm,
absolutely. It makes him look like really super because, wow, look what I've got. Mm. I've got two tigers as pets. You've got a little dog.
But where do they get them from, Smaragda?
You know, I was actually found a very interesting article, and it was something that they spoke about. It was traffic that was quoted. And they said that as of July 2015, this year, there are more than 280 tigers kept across 44 facilities in South Africa.
Sorry, just repeat that?
Yes. 280 tigers kept across 44 facilities in South Africa. So we talk about puppy farms, but we've got tiger farms.
Wow.
And there's nothing, you know, they benefit obviously when there's something wrong, you know, then the Animal Protection Act comes into place.
Yes, yes.
But if nobody goes there, if nobody sees what's going on, they won't be reported.
No.
And these people just, dump tigers at 8 days old, 9 days old. And people buy them because they've got an exotic pet. Makes them look really special.
So you could actually go to one of these facilities and buy a tiger.
You could. And you just need to make sure, well, if you want to do it the legal way, you need to make sure that you have a transport permit. But then after that, it's, you know,
that's
absolutely
fine. Not a problem.
Not a problem at all.
And it's strange that with this carrying on that we haven't had more accidents. I mean, these are supposed to be, they're wild animals.
They are wild,
I'm surprised there hasn't been more escapes and accidents, but I'm sure it's coming.
I'm sure it's coming. Mm. It has to come at some point. Absolutely. You know, we've heard animals, wild animals or captive wild animals lash out at their owners with monkeys, you know, all of that. So this is just an accident waiting to happen. Even with a circus, we've heard, you know, where tigers have attacked circus workers and so on because of the absolute frustration these animals have to go through. You know, the cages, sorry, just while we're on the circus issue, the cages in the circus are much smaller than would ever be okay in a zoo. Yet it's okay for a circus to keep them in those cages. I find this tragic and illogical.
No, it is. And you were talking about monkeys. Many shows back, we had a lady in for monkey rescue, and she was talking about it's all very fine and well, this cute little monkey, and you know, everybody is so excited about it. But that little monkey has special needs.
Yes.
It has to be with its mother 24/7. And once they become adolescents, their behavior changes and they actually become dangerous.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And people don't know this.
No.
Because it's cute to have a monkey. Mm. And I've often said to people, and this may sound really, really harsh, and I don't mean it in such a harsh way, but so many people will say, I keep a little baby monkey because I don't have children. Mm. So I'm going to dress her up in a little bib and nappies and so on. If you really want to make a difference to the lives of any beings, rather go to a children's home. Help out there. The need is so great.
Yes.
Instead of actually negatively impacting on the life of an exotic animal who needs to be with him, with his or her mom.
Go to a orphanage and go cuddle babies.
Do something.
Foster.
Absolutely.
No, there is always a way around it. Now, as I said, I missed the show. What were they focusing on? You mentioned tigers. What other exotic pets are big in this country right now?
It seems to be that wolves are becoming a very big issue. This was not the focus of Carte Blanche, but we've seen it happening.
Yes.
That wolves are now being bred to be sold, you know, to people. Now, really, as a pet, you know, we have so many domesticated dogs and cats who
sitting
are needing
in shelters,
homes.
Yes.
Why do we need to have exotic animals like wolves in our country? Now, if they start biting, if they start creating havoc, what are we going to do with them? Where are they going to go? I don't even know. I think there's one, or there's one sanctuary, and I don't even know if it's really all that legit. I'm not sure at all. But what are we going to
do
with them?
Well, you see, that was my question, as we were saying early on. I said to Corinne, I said, the problem is here, and I've seen it. I've seen the little kids in the pet stores going, oh, daddy, please buy me a bearded dragon, you know, and they want these animals. And yes, they're so cute, and you really want to bring them home. But you get them home and you realize that they're a lot more work than a cat would be, a domestic cat or a dog. And somewhere down the line, the kid loses interest, and then where do they go?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what happens then to these animals? Are they sort of released into the wild where they won't survive because this is not their environment? Do they get taken back to the pet stores for resale?
Exactly.
Or they killed? You know,
absolutely.
I've seen big boa constrictors that have been hacked into pieces and thrown in rubbish bins. Mm. And it's a big job to look after these. And there's no education. The pet stores do not educate the public in what it entails.
No, because they're after the money. Lisa Jane Fawkes, who's part of Ban Animal Trading, always says, if you take money out of the equation, we have to wonder how many of these exotic breeders will still be breeding animals.
Yes, for conservation only.
For conservation.
To put back in the wild.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is with exotic breeding, you can't really take those animals and put them back in the environment because they carry all kinds of diseases and so on. So this conservation little thing that they call just makes no sense whatsoever.
Now, Corinne, I'm going to jump over to you for a second here. You were saying earlier, you were talking to us about the mallard duck. Now, that's an exotic animal. What were you saying about that?
Well, exactly what the lady next to me is saying is that what do you do with an animal that you don't want anymore? And mallard ducks are, I get phone calls about people who want to release them into the nature reserve. I do a lot of work in Kloofendaal. And we had a mallard duck that was released without permission. And this mallard duck, they actually interbreed with our indigenous ducks, with our African black duck and with our Egyptian geese. So we have a pair of African black ducks that's on the dam in our reserve. And yes, this mallard duck did manage to push the male away, because this mallard duck was a male, and or is a male, was, he's gone now. And then he did, he chased the African black duck away, the male, and then there was left with the female, and they must have mated, and I don't know what's happened to her. She's also gone now. Mm. And he's luckily the mallard duck is also gone.
So this is what happens if they're released into the wild. If they survive, that's firstly a big if, but in the case of the duck, it obviously could adapt and survive. They could eventually push out the indigenous species.
Or interbreed.
And interbreed and create a hybrid.
Yes.
Gosh, that is very, very scary. And what you say, wolves, tigers, what else, Murata?
Wolves, tigers, snakes, obviously. Mm. You know, exotic reptiles seem to be big business. Yes. I'm not quite sure. I've heard that the business is taking a bit of a dive.
Yes.
And so, you know, the business is taking a dive, but some people seem to say that, no, everything is okay. So it's a lot of snakes, lots of bearded dragons, obviously, lots of exotic reptiles, which people want because they think they're easy to care for, you know, just stuff it in a cage.
And
now and again, yeah, or even spiders, lots of spiders, tarantulas and so on. And for me, it's really sad, you know. You find them in the pet shops in these little glass, I don't know what you call them, even these little plastic.
Tiny little buckies.
They look like, some of them look like jam jars or whatever. And the pet people will tell you, the breeders will tell you, no, but that's the way they live. They don't need a lot of space. Okay, they don't need a lot of space, but in nature, they don't live in a jam jar.
No.
So if they want to move around, they can actually move around. Here, you confine them to such a small space. I think it's absolutely cruel.
No, it is, and even fish. I've seen those little, what they call Chinese fighter fish?
Oh, the Siamese.
Siamese fighter fish. As you say, in little tiny jam jars.
You know, that is so sad. I was reading about them the other day. They are in the little rice puddles in the rice fields and so on.
Yes.
And when those puddles dry up, they kind of lie in wait, and they'll also sometimes jump to another puddle where there's a little bit more water.
Okay.
So they're active fish. They're not just, they don't sit in a little
swim in a
jar
circle
and
all the
sit
time.
There
no,
the whole time.
No.
You know, they will jump if it's necessary for them to go, they will do that. Yet we keep them. Why do we keep fish like that? It's an ornament. We see fish as ornaments.
Mm, yes.
And this is, you know, the way that they actually trade in fish is actually terrible. If you see the way that these animals are imported into South Africa, they come in little plastic triangles like that.
Good
it's
heavens.
Like a little bit of water inside.
Yes.
Mm. And we know how many animals die, you know, through transport and so on. Is it really worth it? Just because we want a beautiful fish
yes,
in our
to
home
decorate.
Because it matches the carpets
yes.
or the curtains or whatever.
Goodness me. And then obviously birds, the parrots and the little birdies, which also I've seen horrible stories about how they transport it. They're literally bound up and put into toilet roll holders.
You know, the African grey parrots, those are really it's a huge problem in South Africa. Well, not for us only, but even from the Congo, because most of these African grey parrots are wild caught in Congo. What they then do is they transport them to South Africa, and figures show or percentages show that between 45% and 60% of these animals die in the catching process.
Yes.
Then they have to be transported here, and another 10% to 20% will die.
Goodness.
We have them here, and then we allow them to breed, and we call their offspring. Remember now, the parents are wild caught.
Yes.
And we call the offspring, we call them domesticated or captive bred. That's not captive bred. Those are the babies of wild caught animals. Something really, really interesting that I just need to find here, and this was about the parrots. So we exported from South Africa, South Africa, Bahrain, and Senegal, we exported 120,000 African grey parrots between 2007 and...
Exported. Wow. That's a lot.
So if we have so many animals to export, why do we still need to import them? If captive breeding is so wonderful, you know, and we're saving the wild populations, because that's what they say.
Yes.
If we are we're saving the wild populations by breeding them in captivity, if this is true, then why are we still importing?
Yes, because they're
African
not indigenous. So obviously they are being captive bred.
Yes. But why
are
we still...
And then sent back to the country they came from.
No. They go to Europe. They go everywhere else.
Yes.
So if this is true, why are we still importing captive, wild caught African grey parrots? It makes no sense.
No, it makes no sense whatsoever. And I mean, the list, you know, as you're saying, goes on and on and on. I've heard of the oddest poor little creatures kept in back gardens. And the interesting thing is a lot of these animals have extremely long lifespans. So, you know, these guys are going to sit in a cage or whatever for, I mean, how long does a parrot live? Isn't it something like 80 years or something like that?
Absolutely.
So he's going to sit in the cage for 80 years. Mm. And then where does he go? You know, which is really, really a problem.
The wild caught issue is also really a problem. I spoke to some people who approve of sustainable use of, you know, wildlife. So they'll say, no, it's okay. Don't worry about the people catching the parrots in the wild, because this is really a prolific species and they won't just, you know, die out so quickly, go extinct so quickly. So don't worry about that. But that's not the point. It's also about the fact that there's so much cruelty involved. And this is where animal rights and animal welfare comes in.
Yes.
But people seem to think only about money, only about funding, about what I want, and never mind about the animals.
And the human needs. Yeah. The human need. Now, when we talk about indigenous animals, now you can maybe answer that for me, Carrie. It's illegal to keep something like a tortoise. Am I right? So you can't just go into the wild and go and, even you were saying earlier, you found two boys trying to catch scorpions. Legally, you're not allowed to do that. Am I right?
Yes, no, you're not allowed to do that. But I was just thinking the whole sort of habitat, and it's very exciting to actually find animals, any animals, in a natural environment. And you that's what we actually do in the reserve. We actually go out with school children, also adults. We give them a jar, depending what the walk is. For example, we've got frog evenings. We go looking for frogs in the evening because they're nocturnal. We give the participants a little container and or a plastic bag, and they go out and catch tadpoles and frogs and whatever else. You know, we've caught little terrapins, which we do have. We have got crabs, and it's very exciting. It's very a lot of fun. And then whatever we catch, we show the presenter, and we show each other as well. And he will tell you what frog it is, what tadpole it is, and what role it has in nature.
Right.
So this is very exciting. It's much better than it is lovely to having frogs in your own pond, as we do have. We do actually have frogs in our pond that have come by themselves at home. But it's good to see the animals in the natural habitat. And there are lots if you look for it. And it's actually wonderful going, as we do, with an expert in insects, or in spiders and scorpions, or in butterflies. There are a lot of different we have had reptile walks, but reptiles are not that easy to find. But we do also have birding, of course. Birding we'd also have. So a lot of but what we do with school groups, when we take groups not bigger than 20, we give the little children each a jar, or big children, we also have matrix as well, a little jar, and they find whatever interests them. And it can be a caterpillar, it can be a grasshopper, it can be a fungus, and then we explain what it is and what it eats and what eats it, and then what role it has in nature, because everything in nature has a function.
Absolutely.
And that makes it really exciting, because often when you go for a walk, you don't look at the small things, you don't see them. And that also boils down to also what those creatures eat. So it can be the plants as well. You also just learn about the plants and the flowers and the seeds, and so it's a whole ecological experience that we offer to the
the community. Wild, which is to me,
and it is wild. Yes,
you know, Smarty, you were saying earlier, people are saying, well, where can we go to see animals? You know, isn't it perhaps better to see them out of a cage?
Absolutely. This is what Ban Animal Trading is looking at the moment, to compile a list of where people can take their children. You know, because we're always saying, no, don't do this, no, don't do that, don't go to the zoo, don't go to the circus, don't captive breed animals, don't do this, don't do that. And we need to say to people, this is where you can go to learn more about animals in nature. This is where you can go to a reserve to see what these animals look like in nature without interacting with them, just to look at them and see what it's like.
And not kill them.
Not kill them, and not to have them in a cage.
Yes. Now, I mean, you know, there's been arguments that I've seen people saying, and I, you know, you read these things. I saw an article about that was written by somebody saying that if there weren't animals in zoos, kids wouldn't learn to love animals because they wouldn't see them. You know, photograph wouldn't be. What do you say to that?
You know, I don't think that people learn compassion for animals by handling them and by seeing them in captivity. Honestly, I look at animals and my children look at animals in captivity, and it's a sad thing to see. That it doesn't teach you compassion. Mm. What teaches you compassion is to understand that you cannot go to the zoo. Because of these and these reasons, we learn to respect animals by understanding why it's wrong to keep them in a circus, to keep them in a zoo and so on. So I'm sorry, but you know, I didn't grow up on a farm, and just a personal issue, but I have compassion for sheep and pigs.
Yes, absolutely.
So that doesn't work for me.
Something that you have. And now, just turning to the circuses for a second, I mean, that is just tragic. To me, that is tragic when you see these poor animals that live, as you say, in these tiny little cages, transported from pillar to post, made to rehearse, let's call it that, every single day for human entertainment. And then when they get too old or they're not performing anymore, they are euthanized.
Yes, because where do they go?
Would a trained polar bear end up, you know?
Yes.
Or maybe not a polar bear, I don't know if they've trained them, well, but a grizzly bear.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you saw that article, I think it was in People magazine, about that poor bear that was kept in captivity that lost all of its hair. Mm. I mean, it was just too terrible to see this poor animal and what had become of this proud brown bear.
Yes, yes. You know, we take absolutely beautiful and majestic animals and we reduce them to pathetic creatures sitting on a little ball or jumping through a hoop just so that we can laugh. There's no educational value in that whatsoever.
No.
It's entertainment and that's it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And these, these circuses, again, it's not illegal.
It's not illegal.
But surely, Smaragda, there is a cruelty factor there. Surely, I'm correct me if I'm wrong in saying the SPCA is the only one with authority to now go and remove them. Surely that alone, that you've got a wild animal in a cage, is cruel.
Absolutely. But, you know, they have to work with the Animals Protection Act. So they're very strict, you know.
See, there's that's nothing, the problem. Yeah, and that's so outdated. They can do.
So this is what the circus will tell you. The circus owners, they will say to you, well, the SPCA has been here and they think that our animals are
fine.
What
can they do? There's nothing they can do.
They say that they look after the animals because they've got food, water, and their coats are in beautiful condition and so on. Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. I mean, you can't abuse an animal and expect the SPCA to say that's okay because they won't. But that's not the only issue that we have. It's about the captivity. It's about how do you train these animals. You know, they'll say to us, yes, but you just criticize and you never come to a training session. Oh, yes. You're going to invite us to a training session and show us how you actually train these animals right from the beginning. When you get them from the zoo where you've bought them from, you're going to take us to those training sessions, please. We don't believe that nonsense.
Mm-mm. No, and those laws are so outdated. Mm. I do. I actually feel very sorry for the NSPCA because they take a lot of flack.
They do.
But their hands are completely tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until those ancient laws are re-looked at. And because, I mean, anyone, you're quite right. They've got food, they've got water, they've got shelter. Okay, it's fine.
Yeah.
Nothing else they can do about it unless there's a blatant act of cruelty going on.
Yes.
Which is sad. And I don't know, Smaragda, is a difference being made? I've seen a lot less circuses than when I was growing up. There used to be a circus every month with these animals. And there seems to be a lot less.
You know, I think at the moment I know of three circuses that have animals.
Mm.
But attendance is not that great anymore.
Really?
You know, we protest almost every weekend when they are around in Gauteng. And attendance is dropping to the fact, so much so that they have to hand out free tickets.
Oh, really?
It's really heartwarming for us to see that, but the laws need to be changed. Mm. And I think one way of changing the law is actually to get public participation, get the people out onto the streets and not just on Facebook saying, oh, this is so terrible.
Yeah.
That's also important because that's the way we spread the message.
That helps.
But please come out, come join us. Let's be a voice for the animals out there.
Yes. No, absolutely. I think I actually wrote something on our Canine Zone Facebook wall and I thought, you know, I was just thinking that I was scrolling down and seeing all these animals up for adoption, you know, the dogs and cats, and never ending. And then people would comment, and I actually set a challenge and said, this is great. That does help. It does network, does create awareness. But we also need to do something in real life and not just be armchair warriors.
Exactly.
We do need to, whether it's volunteering, whether it's, as you say, attending a demonstration, whether it's, you know, spreading the message, getting people educated. Absolutely. You also have to do something physically.
Absolutely.
But that's good to hear that. I think a lot of people would rather go to one of those human acrobatic, I think it was the Russian circus. I don't think there were any animals in it. But, I mean, that's fascinating to watch. It's a wonderful show. You walk away and you haven't contributed to animal suffering.
Exactly. And it's wonderful to, you know, people say we're against the circus. No. Sorry, we're not against the circus.
No,
we're against
the animals
right. being used in the circus for the entertainment of humans. Doesn't work like that. You want to use humans to entertain humans? That's perfect.
Yes, no, for sure. And what about these dolphin shows and all the rest that you get at the SeaWorlds of the world?
Yes.
Same thing.
I think, you know, Taiji being so much in the news nowadays, and thank you so much to social media for actually awakening us and making us realize what's happening. If you see what they do there is they catch these dolphins, not only for the meat, but then in captivity they'll train them and then sell them to places like SeaWorld and to other zoos and so on. So any facility that uses a captive animal to entertain you needs to be avoided. Must be avoided.
Well, you know, if you think about it, the solution is actually very easy. It's just to get the buy-in of the public and the laws to be changed. It's very, very easy. I mean, I don't know how it went, but I know, for example, that Soweto Animal Rescue was doing a trial run at a pet store in Cresta this weekend to put puppies from shelters up for adoption and following the, you know, you fill in your adoption form, the checks are done, everything's done, and just to see if that would now stop the sale of puppies and kittens in pet stores, which I don't know. I thought it was a great idea. And yet when I did sort of mention it on one of my rants on Facebook, I had a lot of people saying, it wouldn't work. But it would be one solution so that they're not full of puppies and kittens from puppy mills and backyard breeders.
You know, I think probably we need to look at the needs and the needs of the animals to the puppies because they are really stressed out when they have to go, you know, say, for example, from a shelter to a pet shop. So it's not a good idea probably to have the real puppies there. It's best to have like a photograph or whatever. And as long as people can fill it in and everything goes back to the shelter, then it's not a bad idea. But to have the puppies physically there, I don't know if it's, you know, such a good idea. I don't know. Also, you know, the internet and Facebook, all of social media is a problem when it comes to selling animals. And not only puppies and kittens, exotic animals.
Yes.
They're everywhere.
Everywhere.
And there's the I think it's called the black web, or am I? I can't remember exactly what, or the dark web. There we go. I found it. The dark web, where you can basically buy anything. I was offered two pangolins this week.
Goodness.
My goodness.
It's that easy.
Oh, now, Corinne, I mean, do you get a lot of these animals? I know you there at Kloofendal. Do you ever come across an indigenous animal that's been dumped there?
Not often, no. Luckily not. But we do, what is really, really nice is that Freemi, an organization you probably know about.
Yes, absolutely.
They do release some of their rehabilitated animals there, which is wonderful, like hedgehogs.
Yes.
What do you call these? Different lizards. They've also terrapins they've released there. The bigger animals, they've been reintroduced by City Park. So we've got mountain reedback and duiker, but we also have got the natural inhabitants, such as slender mongoose, scrub hare, dussies. We've got an otter, which
is
great. Yes,
really.
And we also have a porcupine.
Goodness
and but the hedgehogs are sweet. That's the they only live for 3 years. They don't live very long. But it's lovely. You don't often hedgehogs you don't really see because they're nocturnal and they're quite shy.
Yes.
But you see the droppings. I really enjoy seeing the droppings of the different animals because you can identify them from, you know, what produced them. And that's also again what people discover. They actually don't normally see. You don't even look at droppings. But when they learn about droppings, it's fascinating to know where the scrub hairs and they've been eating the fresh grass. You see lots of droppings on the fire breaks where the new grass is coming out. And you see a lot of droppings off the mountain reedback there too.
Oh, But now, like Kloofendal, is it surrounded with a fencing or anything, or can
a fence? It's a good thing
so
to have.
It's completely secure for
that
them.
That is very good. Yes, because it's a concrete palisade,
okay.
Which is very important because you have a chance of poaching. Unfortunately, also you don't want the animals to escape; they might get run over.
Sure.
So they're protected there, and it's luckily the reserve is 128 hectares.
It's not big enough
for squatting. Luckily, we don't have squatting. We have had a bit of poaching, but I think that's been stopped because we do have poach hunts. You know, we check for snares. So generally, we don't have. Just as you mentioned, we are a bit worried about people illegally collecting, say, plants or muti plants or scorpions, or you've got certain spiders. They are very sought after. The baboon spiders is a very special one. But not much. I think it helps a lot that City Parks is there. There's a presence during the week, and we have our guided walks that also educate the people. So if people have been on our guided walks and learn, for example, the scorpions, that they are pretty special. We have an actually endangered one in the reserve. So if they see other people digging things out, I think they
They all work together. They all have such an important role to play.
Yes. Well, actually, it was quite funny. We had one time my husband found somebody with a net collecting insects. So he said, "What are you doing?" So she was doing a project at UJ University, and there were another 98 students in her class with the same project.
Mm-hmm.
So now that was killing. That's collecting, because when we collect, when we're with people, we release. We collect, we look at them, and we release them, you know, so we don't kill. But so this was this project that they had to collect. I've forgotten how many, they had 50 or something insects per, you know, different species. But in a nature reserve, you're not allowed to actually kill, you know, or remove anything from the reserve. So that was actually turned out to be actually really nice, because I got hold of the lecturer, and she was horrified that there was the student collecting in the natural area. But the result was that the whole class came to Kloofendal, and they had we divided them up into groups of 20, and we took them for a guided nature walk with nets.
Oh, wonderful.
We provided nets, we provided sample jars. So they collected. I mean, they caught and identified with the guide, and then released them. And then after, actually, it was really quite fun. I was asked to set a test for them. We have got a specimen that have died from natural causes, a lot of insects. And so I was asked to set a test for them where they had to identify the insect.
Yes.
And again, what my favorite thing, the function of nature, in nature of that particular insect. So that was, so it turned out from somebody collecting illegally, it turned out to be
into
very positive.
A real positive
educational experience.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's also the thing. People aren't educated enough. You don't find, last time we had you here, we spoke about the little weaver birds that are everywhere right now building their nests. People don't know much about them, about the hardy-dars. We all see them, they're there, but we don't know anything about them. I was so blessed two nights ago I've got a double story and leaning out my top window, and this beautiful big owl flew over into the tree in my neighbor's garden. We sat there, and then he flew back over and sat on my roof. Now, I see that as a great blessing. Yes. I was like, oh, wow, that's such a blessing. Yes. That is luck coming my way. A lot of people don't think that, but my thoughts immediately turned to these poor owls that are being killed by eating rats that have been poisoned. And I know in the West Rand, we have a terrible problem there with huge rats coming down
from
the mountains.
And that is because, of course, the snakes, people kill snakes and people kill owls. But I also want to stress what Spinakpra was saying next to me, that these animals, when you put them in a cage, their natural habitat is big. They need a big area for where to nest. For example, you talked about the weavers. They need to have an area where they have nesting material. They need to feed their young. Now the weavers, actually, they're normally seed eaters, so they also need a place where they can collect seeds for their food. But also when they have young, they feed them with insects. So again, you need a whole ecosystem to actually sustain.
Yes.
So it can't just be in a little cage. Each animal needs a habitat.
Needs a habitat. But now, Sprata, just going back on that, when you go to the pet stores, you can go to any pet store, and if you wanted to buy a bearded dragon, easy, no
Absolutely.
Problem, 350 rand, you've got it. Off you go. they're getting this from somewhere. So there's a lot. Are there a lot of breeders?
You know, we pick up when anything happens on the, in the media about exotic breeders or exotic animals as pets or whatever. The breeders pop out everywhere. So yes, it's very easy. It's just there's so many of them, and it's difficult to track them down. I also find this very interesting. They will always say, if you ban the exotic pet trade, it means that the trade will go underground. Well, actually, really, it's underground already. There are so many animals being smuggled, not only out of South Africa, but also into South Africa.
Yes.
There are so many pet shops that will tell you that they've been offered illegal reptiles and so on to sell, and some of them don't, some of them will. So that's really not an excuse. I think if you say ban the exotic trade completely, it will just be much easier to police.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I don't know. To me, probably not, again, not having them for sale in pet stores is a great start. I wonder how much of a pet store's revenue comes from the sale of these exotic animals.
It's very interesting. I spoke to one or two pet shop owners who obviously weren't happy with our being there.
Mm.
But that's okay. That doesn't matter. You know, we try and engage some of them. Some of them just chase us out anyway. And one of the pet shop owners actually said to me that they keep the animals in the shops because it attracts the people.
Ah.
So you see, again, an animal becomes an object. It's not something that you look at with compassion and so on. Oh, we're going to put it here because then it becomes an ornament or whatever, and people are going to come in and they're going to come.
Yes, it's a decoration. Yes.
And, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know how much money they really make out of this. But again, if there was no money involved, would they actually sell them? So there must be money.
But you're right in saying that, because I think especially like the little kids, you know, oh, look at the fishies and oh, look at the, you know, and oh, look at the, I mean, even I, when I'm in a pet store, I go and look at the animals because that's what I'm about.
Yes.
So yes, they may not be selling them, but they see it as a draw card, which, you know, there's a lot of other ways to market your business.
Absolutely. You don't have to use live sentient beings.
Mm.
To market your business, keep them in captivity. Little kids run in and say, please buy me a bearded dragon. And parents give up and they buy the little bearded dragon. And although it's illegal to release exotic animals in South Africa into the wild, we don't know where else to take them. So like you've said, many of them are
what happens, what happens to them when you're tired of them? Mm-hmm. You know, they aren't any big shelters. Mm-hmm. Freebie, I think, deals with indigenous animals. I don't know if they would take. I mean, I'm just thinking now, you listening to the show, and you now sitting at home and you've got a couple of hedgehogs, bearded dragons, whatever, snakes, exotics. And you think, okay, well, that's it. Where do you take them? Because you can't go and put them in the wild. They'll die. So what do you do with them?
There's some individuals, few people that we know who take in rescue animals. But the rest of the people, yes, what do they do
with
them? Dumped, and, you know, fish are just flushed down the toilet because when we come back from holiday, we'll just buy another one.
Yes.
So easy.
And, I mean, what's scary is I've seen copperheads being sold, which I think they're from Texas, they're from the United States, or sort of more to the south. Now, these are very venomous snakes, and they're bringing them in. Yeah, I don't know, if you had a copperhead and you released it in Kriffendal, would it survive? Would it breed with other snakes? What would happen?
Luckily, I don't think the snakes interbreed.
Okay.
It wouldn't survive. It would need a mate to carry on. It wouldn't survive. I don't know. It probably would find some rats and mice to eat and lizards. Mm. So it probably would find food. But it wouldn't survive. No.
No. No. You see, and it's just, people don't realize the amount of work involved.
Exactly.
They don't realize. And kids, I mean, I don't know, you know, children from the time when they want silkworms to keep and all the rest. Kids want pets. And I think parents sort of say, yes, my little darling, you want that, you get that, not a problem. Not realizing that you know, it's going to become your problem in time, because kids won't look after animals long time. They lose interest, they move on. It's a natural thing. And the other little creature you see in so many pet stores are hamsters.
Oh, yeah.
Now, again, where do these little guys come from? They're being bred like you wouldn't believe.
Absolutely. So we've got, you know, moles for any animal.
For any animal.
Yes, we visited a pet shop 2 weeks ago and we found an alligator for sale.
Oh.
They want 25,000 rand for him, and he sits in this glass cage with the water. Now, honestly, I fail to see how this is in any way compassionate, how this is in any way anything else but about money, about the fact that you can tell your friends, oh, come and look what I've got.
I've got an alligator.
It's just wrong on every single level. Yeah. And just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean it's ethical.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, Smarata, what are you guys doing? What is your mission? Where would you like to see the state of affairs in the next couple of years?
Well, we would like to see exotic animals as pets banned in this country.
Does that include all exotics?
That includes
fish in a fish tank, marine fish, everything that's...
Because the industry is so cruel, this is what we would like to see. I just need to give people some information, because what we've heard is that reptile people who breed exotics say to others, don't listen to what banned animal trading is saying, because you know what's going to happen. Once they've got this legislation going, which is probably going to take a few years, but it doesn't matter, we're working on it.
The legislation has happened.
Yes, but it's not
August. August last year.
Yes, but that's not, and that's with the NEMBA.
That's with NEMBA. Yes,
yes. But you know, Gauteng, everything goes at the moment. But anyway, don't listen to banned animal trading, because once this legislation comes into place, people are going to come to your house and they're going to remove your beloved pets and put them to sleep. That's not true. All we're saying is, don't breed pets anymore, don't sell them anymore, and obviously, you have to look at the family members, be they exotic or indigenous or domesticated or whatever. Obviously, you have to look after them. Sure. Nobody is advocating that all exotic animals
go and
be
kill
killed.
Them all down.
No,
yes,
it
right.
doesn't matter. We just need to. Can we have some compassion for animals?
Get that control back. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Corinne, from your side, I mean, you were saying that you've got a big event coming up this weekend.
Tomorrow.
I mean, so you are focusing on education from the kids upwards.
Because it's actually so exciting, everything that you see. When I take a guided walk, I never know what you're going to see. I rely on the participants in the group to find all these interesting things. So tomorrow we really like to have school groups, because the younger people learn about the respect and also interest in the
stays
environment.
Stays with them forever.
And the more, you know, the more they learn, the more their interest they will have, the more responsibility towards conservation. What's happening tomorrow, we've got 135 grade 7, 8 and 9 learners from a school, and they're coming, that's a big group. So our groups that we take, our guided walks, normally not more than 20 in a group. So with this group, we're taking them on a nature treasure hunt, where they learn different things. They learn about the environment, conservation. They learn map reading, and they learn team building.
Yes.
Because what happens? We set out a course, which we did yesterday already, because they're coming tomorrow. This big group. We set out two courses for them, and it's like a treasure hunt. But it's called a treasure hunt. They so at each control point, where they have there's red and white tape with a number on it, and say number one, and that will be on a nature features. For example, termite mound. And then there will be a question. So they first, with map reading, they've got to find where that point number one is, the control. And that's a team group. They're groups of three children in a team. And they go out at 1 minute intervals onto there are two courses. So they will go first on the one, and then they'll go on the other course. And that's at the number one, if that's right, it's on the map. And then there's a question sheet. So each team will have a map with the route on it, with the controls on it, and then the other, and they will also have a question sheet on the course, on the controls.
So
on the termite mound,
building
it's a team
and
building.
Learning.
Yeah, because they discussed it. So at the termite mound, there will be a question on termites. Yes. It could be, now these are now grades 7, 8 and 9, so the question is not just what lives there,
sure.
because that's very easy, but it's more on what a role do termites have in nature? What does this termite mound contribute to nature? And and then there are two answers. There can be one right, one wrong, or they can both be correct. So the correct one would be that it aerates the soil, because these termite mounds go down, the tunnels that the termites make go down a long way to water. So they aerate the soil. And also these termites, these mounds we've got, they are grass, they're harvested termites, so they eat grass. And the termites will eat the grass, and then the droppings will eventually become compost. So it's also enrich the soil.
And
allows more plants to grow. So it's enriching the soil, and it's minerals wise.
I wish more companies would do their team. They're very big in team building in the corporate world.
We do offer.
So great to get
offer
them
for,
out there.
For them as well. We've had companies, but we would like many more.
Many more.
Because it is really a team thing. So they come back, and they also get timed. So they come back, and then they have a snack or whatever they want, and then they go on to the next course, that team staying together at all times. So if they disagree about the map, now the one might say, gosh, I think we should turn right. The other one might say, no, we must turn. So then they discuss it as a team, to go. And then the question as well, when they have to answer the question, normally the question is visible, the answer is visible, and they discuss as a team what they think the answer is, and at the end, when everybody's done their two courses, then we go through the answers.
Gosh, that sounds like so much fun. And I actually, we always run out of time so quickly. There was one question I wanted to ask you quickly. I'm on the West Rand, and we are seeing all those beautiful white butterflies at the moment. Tell us a bit about them.
They are the, what are they called, brown-veined white butterflies. They breed, not even in our area, but they breed further south, I think it is, and there are just too many of them, okay? Mm. So they actually want to get away from each other, so they go into a big sort of swarm, and they travel north, and they might or might not find their destination. The destination would have to be a host plant. That Boschia albitrunca is one of the host plants, and they need to find that plant, which we don't have in the Highveld.
Yes.
Further north, there is, further north, north of Pretoria, there are these
trees. They're just passing through,
okay. And a lot of them get eaten, so it's wonderful for the birds, you know, there's a whole nice big food source, but they can only, for them to propagate, they need to lay their eggs on the host plant that the and that those
because you see these beautiful clouds of them down the road.
We do also have in the reserve, we also have butterfly walks. We actually go out with nets with a butterfly fundi, and you learn about each butterfly that you catch, what the host plant is, what the caterpillars look like, and you can even, I don't know if you're aware, but butterflies also, you can sex them. In the male and the female, they're slightly different. That we leave that to the expert. I'm not very good at it.
No, but I think we're very lucky on the West Rand, because we spend a lot of time out in our garden, and we try and be very eco-friendly, so we feed the birds and we don't use pesticides, so we get a lot of gorgeous little babies in our garden.
But in your garden, and there's a lot of lovely things to see.
Absolutely.
You don't have to go to nature reserve to see them.
No, in our own garden, and I mean my garden, it's very jungly. I mean, I love it that way, so we've got lots of lovely insects there, but we've been seeing this beautiful black and blue butterfly that's been visiting the garden quite often. And there's nothing nicer than just sitting there and having a look at them. And no, it's you know, I think it's so important. Again, it comes down to education. Let me, as we wrap up now, Corinne, how can people get hold of you? It would be great to come and do their team building events there and bring their kids their school tours. How can they get hold of you?
We've got the website, www.kloofendaalfriends.org/. That's the website, and there's a lot of, and then you can click on whatever information you'd like to know about. If you could just come up for a picnic or just a walk on your own, or if you have a guided walk, then it's on the website.
Okay, so
under
you
events.
Can just come in on your own, come and have
absolutely.
A picnic.
Absolutely. If you want specifically school groups, we really like to encourage that. The school groups, again, as you click on school group.
Yes.
School groups. And also the opening times. It's open every day of the week from 6 in the morning to 6 in the evening. And it's safe. It really is so nice that I can walk there on my own.
Really?
And prepare
safe. So this is what we need. Hats off to, you say, Departments of Parks and Recreation.
Yes.
No, thank you for doing that, because especially in Gauteng, there's so few open spaces where people can just go and relax in nature. We don't have the ocean. We don't have anywhere else to go. So That's a treasure you have there, Corinne.
It is again, the people do need to realize that the bylaws, they are good, the public for public open spaces, that you are not allowed to have alcohol there and you're not allowed to make electronic music, you know.
Yes.
So it's peaceful that you respect everybody.
Okay, great. So people can go on your website and that's how they can get hold of you. Smaragda, how can people help you before we got 3 minutes?
They can go to our Facebook page. They'll find us there. They can go to our website, www.bananimaltrading.org. They'll find all the information there. And that's basically how we operate.
Yes.
And we just want people to, when they see a cub in captivity, with any animal in captivity, please don't support facilities like that. That's something that really will kill the industry.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, ladies, I could bring you back again for the next 2 months to have this conversation because it's never ending. There's so much we could talk about. So I think we're going to do this again very, very soon. And thank you so much. I mean, I know you guys go and demonstrate outside courts for dog fighting. So you do everything out there. Yes. And as I always say, I have animal angels in studio today. Well, that's about all we've got time for. We'll be back next Wednesday, same time, same place. While you're out there, remember to pick up the latest issue of Canine Zone magazine. We've got awesome stories in there, lots of doggies up for adoption, lots of happy homing stories and advice for your pet as well. We'll be back next week. We're going to play out with a song that I love. It's called Cheerleader, and I do sing to my dogs. Now, as you hear the song play out, I always change it to, ooh, I think that I found myself a terrier, and she's here when I need her. So enjoy the song. Bye for now.
Animal Central on cliffcentral.com.